Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier. Game on. Rugby.
Marie, whatever about you burning the pancakes today, there's something I can't forgive you about. You've been hanging around with other second rows. What's going on?
I hung around with James Ryan this morning. He's a brand ambassador for Revive Active Zest Active, and he's a big guy.
He's a big man, to be fair to him.
He is, because I had to hold the microphone up to his head and my arm was sore.
He had a shoulder burn after it.
I just hope he didn't tell you he thought he was pregnant.
He did not.
Good.
But I was comparing his height to you, Donica. He's a lot bigger than you.
Oh, there you go, Marie. I'm on my fade away. I'm only eating 5 times a day at the moment.
If you keep eating 5 times a day, it won't be long before you go as far out as you were up.
Remember the time you called me Ken Boy? But Marie, he was in good form?
Yeah, he was. I had a good chat with him before we turned the microphone off on, and he's in better form then, but like, it's difficult. He's young, you turn the microphone on, it's a hard to
we know how he
keep
feels
the personality going.
You are.
It is hard as well though, Ruby, after a loss like that. You're just, you know you have to do these things, but it's inside, you're just in bits still after the match.
And then Marie Crowe comes to quiz you.
Right, let's hear from him. So James, a couple of days have passed now since the England game. How are you feeling?
Yeah, disappointed. Part of the most disappointing thing for us was we probably feel like, you know, we didn't fire many shots. We never really got a foothold in the game. Pretty sore as well. Hugely physical contest, which we knew it would be. So kind of the next couple of days are about recovering mentally, physically, so that when we kind of assemble on Wednesday, we're able to look at the game, we're able to take our learnings from it, and then build for what is another a big 2 weeks ahead.
Everybody's talking about physicality, and you mentioned it there. Were you prepared for the level of physicality that England were going to bring?
Yeah, look, I think we knew heading into the game. We're heading to Twickenham, HQ of the World Cup finalists. They have a huge pack. You know, we spoke about being physical, being aggressive. You know, we didn't show enough of that. I thought first half, I thought they came to the blocks very early, very quickly. They definitely got the upper hand there as well. I thought we were, a couple of moments, we were unfortunate with two balls went in behind. When the ball's kind of bubbling around like that, it's tricky, and 9 times out of 10, we probably deal with that. But unfortunately, we make a couple of mistakes, and all of a sudden we're 14-0 down, and we're trying to chase the game. You know, England have got the wind in their sails, so it's a difficult place to be. At the same time, you know, they were kind of dominant in the first half. I thought for second half we were a bit better. We showed a bit more grit. We started well, got a good scrum penalty. You know, we had much more possession, but, you know, we definitely need to be more consistent, more relentless with that physicality that you're speaking about, which is disappointing for us.
How do you feel about that, though, that is such a big part of the game now, that the game that you're going to be playing for the next decade at least, a lot of it seems to be about the physicality of it?
Yeah, that's rugby is a collision sport. That's the way it's always been. You know, if you win the collisions of the game, you ultimately win the game. So not a whole lot's changed in that regard. England are up there with the most physical side in the world. So, you know, we spoke about, you know, matching that and going beyond, but we probably didn't fire any shots really, especially that first half. So, yeah, we have to take a learnings from that one.
Is that nearly one of the most disappointing parts of it, that you didn't really fire any shots?
Yeah, it is a bit. We just didn't get a foothold in the game, really. Now, as I said, I thought second half we regrouped a bit better. And there were patches in the game where, you know, we had the upper hand, particularly the start of that second half. You know, we had the majority of possession. We were playing a lot of the game in their 22. You know, but as I said, you know, we need to be more relentless with that. And we need to start better, especially when you're in Twickenham. I think given an English side of that calibre, I suppose 14-0 start and kind of not matching them in the first 20 minutes makes it very difficult for you for the remaining three quarters.
What goes through your head as a player when you are chasing a game and you've conceded 2 tries to the World Cup finalists?
Yeah, we're just thinking next moment. So for us, we make mistakes all the time, and that happens. But you know, the big one for us is not dwelling on them. We've got to move on pretty quickly. So I think after going down like that, we're just thinking about getting back control into the game, getting into our flow, maybe playing a bit of the ball in their half, and getting after them. But we probably didn't do that as well as we would have hoped.
There's a lot of calls for potential changes for the Italy game. Just going back into camp, knowing that there's pressure from the outside, does that make it difficult for the team then?
You know, there's probably always going to be pressure. There's always going to be, you know, conversation from the outside. For us, we try to kind of veer away from any of that.
You had a tangle with Itoje. What happened there?
Listen, he was just coming through a ruck. You know, those kind of exchanges happen very often in a game. It was a very physical game, so no surprises there. So there's a few kind of tangles at right, which is no surprise. You know, it's kind of, you're getting two good sides going at each other. So, yeah.
They're in the lead up to the Six Nations, and I suppose the lead up to Andy Farrell kind of taking over. There was a lot of talk about the captaincy, and Johnny Sexton ended up being appointed captain, but your name was linked with it. Were you part of the conversation before he was announced as captain? Does it work like that?
No, it doesn't really work like that. You know, Johnny was selected as captain, and kind of that was it. We're all 100% behind him. I think he's somebody that particularly younger players like myself can learn a huge amount from. You know, he's been around a long time. He's seen it all. You know, his heart's always in the right place. He, you know, as competitive as he is individually, and, you know, as motivated he is to be the best player he can be, he's always a team first player. He's a massive driver of standards around everything we do, both on and off the pitch. He's an unbelievable captain for us to have. You know, and I'm loving kind of, so it's getting access, you know, to somebody like that, who probably, you know, a player like that doesn't come around that very often. And so, yeah, we're all kind of, we're all learning from him, and you know, there's plenty of other guys in the team that are all good leaders in their own right. So you know, the one thing I would say is, you know, we've all got to be leaders, we've all got to have a point of view and have an input on things. So, you know, for us as well, it's very much us getting better together as a collective.
Is it something that you'd like to perhaps do in the future to lead your country?
Like, listen, this has come up a small bit. I'm kind of not too fussed about these kind of questions. I suppose, you know, after the weekend, I think my head would be in the wrong place if I was talking about the captaincy or something like that. You know, what I am thinking about is the review coming up and how we can get better.
You had some time with Paul O'Connell as well in the lead up to this game. What kind of knowledge did he impart upon you?
Yeah, it was brilliant. You know, we just had a good open conversation, and like, he talked about, you know, his career and his experiences, and I kind of shared some of mine, and it was great to chat to somebody like that, you know, who mentally is, you know, he's world class. Probably one thing I took from it was just in terms of, you know, his training week, you know, the amount of thought he put into that, the amount of detail. You know, it wasn't just a case of, you know, you train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, you do your 40 minutes or an hour and you leave and you get back into the changing room. You know, he always had a very specific plan around what he would do pre-training and what he would do post-training, to kind of get better. So I suppose it's those extra little 1%ers that not every player might have done, that kind of made him the player who he is. So it's things like that that you know, that I can take from him.
And just finally, where do you think Ireland rugby is at right now?
You know, I think we're, in terms of the senior team, we're trying to grow, we're trying to get better. We've some new ideas, and you know, things aren't going to click straight away from us. You know, we're 2 from 3 in the Six Nations. It's not where we want to be, but you know, we've got 2 good wins against Scotland. We had a better performance against Wales. Definitely last week was, or the weekend was below where we should be. But, you know, I've no doubt that we're moving in the right direction.
Tonica, a mature interview from a young man. And in other rugby news, Liam Williams has rejoined the Scarlets from Saracens 7 months earlier than expected.
Yeah, this was an interesting one, Ruby. You wonder, are Saracens starting to clear out earlier than maybe people would have thought? I know you a point on it the other week that you think there could be great players kind of coming to the market. And I know, chatting to your club player in the likes of Worcester, they're really worried because now there's a quality, talented group of players now in the market. So it's good news for Scarlets, who play against Munster this weekend. It'll be good news for Wayne Pivac as well, if he can get Liam Williams back within the next few weeks. They've two big games, England and Scotland, to come. They're missing George North with another head injury, unfortunately, and Josh Adams rolled his ankle in the French game. So they could do with Liam Williams. He's a quality player, and to get him back in the Scarlets is good news for everyone. Let's just hope, Ruby, he's not the only player in the Pro 14 with a European Cup medal this year. I think everyone in Ulster and Leinster would be hoping to keep him short.
With a bit of luck, they will, don't they? With a bit of luck, they will. Also, in other rugby news, Joey Carby looks like undergoing surgery on his ankle, which is a bit of a blow for Munster. But, Donica, who's up next?
Who's up next? Yes, it's Alison Donnelly from the scrumqueen.com. Alison, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
We're great. Yourself? We've been chatting about all the latest rugby stuff. Obviously, Joey Carberry going under the knife to get his ankle sorted. But we wanted to focus on the Ireland-England game. Obviously, our women were defeated 27-0 in Doncaster. But there has been much improvement, Alison, hasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think in reality, the scoreline maybe flattered Ireland a little bit. I thought England were really poor in the second half, and they themselves sort of, you know, credit to Ireland's defence, but they were sort of off form. So I think what's happening in the women's game now is, you know, fully professional England team over the last 12 months, a semi-professional French team, you know, there is just an uneven balance in the tournament that is going to make it much harder for Ireland, Wales, Italy and Scotland to, you know, to keep up, and for Ireland to do the kind of special thing they've done twice this decade and last decade now, and overcome that and beating them. I can't really see that happening in the short term.
And we certainly saw that this weekend. You're right, England, 28 contracted players to play for their country, whereas our girls and women are working jobs and trying to get by, and we're starting to see two tiers within the division. France winning by 50 points over Wales. So it's pros against amateurs now, isn't it?
It is, and in a way it's almost a frustrating conversation to have, because I think what we should be talking about, particularly in the Irish context, is what's happening beneath that, and, you know, probably be talking about where the RFU should be making more strategic investments, which might not yet be paying their pro players their own money. It might be actually getting the nuts and bolts right beneath it, like they have done in England and France with a, you know, a thriving sort of competitive first division. So, you know, hadn't really been much investment and focus on that in Ireland. There's been sort of rebranding and restructuring, but not the kind of you know, the kind of investment that you need to grow the game. And, you know, I think this year's Six Nations, Women's Six Nations, have been so interesting for those of us who followed it for a long time, because, you know, all of the things that have been bubbling away under the surface for years, you know, the poor scheduling, the, you know, poor facilities, etc., and the very unfortunate cancellation of the two Scotland games from the weather and, you know, the coronavirus, you know, there's a kind of renewed interest in it because the media are focusing a bit more on the women's game. So, you know, it's very interesting to suddenly be talking about things that have been bubbling away a little for years. But I think for Ireland, you know, the RFU have basically got to think a bit strategically about what they are going to do. And it may not be paying their top players. It may actually be investing in the structures underneath it.
Alison, they did have an action plan for 2018 to 2023. And in that, their key points were grassroots. But the problem with just focusing on the grassroots is, as you well know, if you don't have success at the top level, we talk about can't see, can't be, and the importance of being able to see our women doing well and competing on the big stage. There's only a certain amount of time that young girls are going to be interested in a game where we're being left behind in, and which is ultimately happening.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, you know, credit to Ireland because, you know, despite that, they are performing and well punching above their weight, as they've always done, right? And, you know, the two home wins are testament to that. But I think, you know, setting out a plan for grassroots sport is great, because actually a point I always make to everybody is that in most of the developed rugby nations, the women's game is the single biggest opportunity to grow the game. In most countries, actually, you know, the adult male game is in decline, right? So, you know, national governing bodies like the RFU have a huge opportunity to grow their numbers through investing in grassroots. But I think what we've not seen from Ireland is actually the investment side. So we've seen a plan and we've seen some rebranding and some restructuring, but, you know, the club game in Ireland is actually quite poor, and that's why you're seeing, you know, players coming across to England to play in the Premiership here. The Interpros, I mean, I've been gone from Ireland for 12 years and I don't think we've seen any real significant sort of you know, commercial revenue sort of interest, investment, restructuring and growth there. So, yes, you know, you have to combine both things, but Ireland are missing, you know, what I always call sort of nuts and bolts. And honestly, I think, you know, missing a huge growth opportunity because, as I say, you know, there's a massive opportunity there to grow numbers through the women's game.
But, Alison, to get the investment, the money has to come from somewhere. And do you think that the women's Six Nations running the same time as the men's competition doesn't give it the limelight it does? Should the ladies' competition be moved to after the men's competition, where it can become more centre stage and not try to compete against the men's game?
Yeah, I think it should. And I think actually, you know, what's actually happened is that the women's tournament sort of outgrown the schedule it was put in. And, you know, it was really important actually for years that it was alongside the men's because it picked up that kind of brand recognition and all the rest of it and, you know, was able to piggyback. But, you know, we get 15,000 people to games in France. England are outgrowing 5,000 crowd capacity stadiums now. You know, they're getting 10,000 down extra. Ireland are getting, you know, up to 5,000-6,000 at Donnybrook, if not more. So, you know, discussions are actually underway behind the scenes between all of the unions and World Rugby and the Six Nations to look at what happens in the women's tournament. I would love to see it moved. I think it's ready. I think later in the year it'd be better for the women's game where, you know, you sort of not got the smashing up against all the other scheduling. So in the first women's game of this tournament, they all the first three games at the same time, and you know, that's not good for a game that's growing. So yeah, I would like to see it move, and I hope we will.
And hopefully what will come hand in hand with that as well is better conditions, better facilities, just a better environment for our women's players. We saw Catherine Spencer coming out just talking about how she felt when she was playing for England, that she felt she had to be grateful and say thank you for everything that she got, but she doesn't feel like things have changed much in recent times. What do you think, Alison?
Yeah, I mean, I think as I said earlier, a lot of the issues that have been bubbling away under the surface are coming to the fore now, because I think women's sports athletes all over the world, not just in rugby, are sort of have had enough of this kind of be grateful culture. And actually, you know, there is an opportunity there and they can see it to sort of, you know, latch on to sponsorship and commercial revenues. And many players are just very frustrated with the governing bodies and the unions who are in charge of their sports for not actually exploiting that. And so I think that's to be welcomed, the fact that players are now speaking to newspapers and the rest of it to say, actually, it's not good enough that the showers I'm using when I play for my country are filthy, or that there isn't sort of, you know, an ability for me to use toilets properly as a woman and the facilities that I need to do that. So I welcome that. I think it's great. And I think anything that sort of makes the game rethink, actually, what's right here for, you know, the significant part of my sport is a good thing.
And Alison, obviously at the weekend there was an injury to Lindsay Peat. How is she?
Well, no, I haven't had an update on her injury, but I mean, she's such an important player for Ireland and actually such an inspirational player because she's playing, you know, well into her late 30s. So I was very sad to see her come off, and she's been an integral part of you know, Ireland's sort of success already in this tournament, the two home wins, and I fully expect them to make that three home wins when they you know, host their final home game. So let's hope she does make a recovery. It didn't look good, did it? And there was, you know, a long gap in the game. But I think we're all waiting to see how she is.
Alison, what's your fear? Like, do you worry that England and France are going to head off now and look to play other professional teams, like New Zealand, and that we just get left behind? Like, I totally agree with Marie. But we're starting to see brilliant talent. The likes of Bevan Parsons, these are incredible players. They're here. If we support them now, we're going to have a brilliant team coming into a World Cup.
Totally agree. And I think it'll be really interesting to ask, you know, to ask the RFE, what, you know, on the kind of commercial interest side, what is actually happening there? You know, where you know, if the RFE want to, you know, they haven't got a bottomless pit of cash, right? So they've got to decide strategically where to put that. But you're right, there's amazing talent in Ireland that have always sort of emerged despite, you know, rather than because of the support that they've had. And to your point about the game being left behind, like, that is starting to happen. So yeah, last summer we had the top four or five nations head off to America to play in, you know, what's called a super series. In Ireland, we're not invited to that. You know, they're not sort of considered in that tier just at the moment. So we are seeing that start to happen. And I guess, you know, the pressure must be put on everybody involved in the game to try and take it to the next level. But I just don't think we should sort of be talking about running before we're walking, right? So I'd much rather see a very kind of a thriving club tournament, an interprovincial tournament that is highly competitive and is getting lots of interest and exposure to, you know, to make sure that Bevan Parsons and so on have got, you know, the framework to do it. And that's sort of missing at the moment.
And if you look at Lindsay Pete, who you mentioned, it does look like she is going to be ruled out for the remainder of the Six Nations. And for a player like her, who was able to come from another sport and to be able to be so successful, it's great to have them, but you want to be able to fill your team with players who've got the skills from underage levels as well, and bring them right through, like Bevan.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, if you know, we haven't, you know, I don't want to come on and be sort of super negative, because of course, you know, the Irish team are full of fantastic athletes. Like Cliona Maloney must be one of the best front row players as well in the world at the moment. So, you know, I think there's no under-20s team, right? There's not really an under-18 structure, although we're starting to see that, you know, we're starting to see teams emerging around there. So there isn't sort of a pathway there whereby the youngsters, you know, the Parsons of this world, etc., can kind of start to fill in the gap and start to be... I mean, she's sort of an exception, isn't she? She's one of these young players who can, you know, not many teenagers can go in and, you know, play for their country and be brilliant immediately. I haven't seen that happen very much, actually, in the women's game. But where there are other players, you know, where are they going? They're going into a pretty average club structure. They might get to play a couple of interprovincials, and they get to play, maybe, if they're lucky, some Six Nations matches, but no under-20s, no under-18s, very few test matches in between the tournaments. I mean, this year there will be more, because, of course, Ireland are now struggling to qualify for the next World Cup, which is sort of unbelievable, given, you know, where they've been on their journey over the last decade and hosting the last one. So, you know, we do need to kind of keep the pressure on to sort of say, where are the moments for all of this young talent to sort of, you know, get experience and be able to become the next, you know, Lindsay Pete.
Yeah, and just looking at it, like, Alison, for you, what's the greatest area? What would you go after straight away? Would you look to the energy of women's AIL? Like, there was good wins this weekend for Blackrock, Galwegians, Old Belvedere, UL Bows, but you're right, we don't have enough teams yet.
Yeah, I'd be investing in a really aspirational club league, you know. I mean, personally, you know, my club is Highfield. I played for Highfield for years, and, you know, gushingly, that team's disappeared. So you're talking about, you know, just a really tangible example, one of the previous best women's teams in the country, and, you know, arguably the best city in the country, but certainly one of the biggest cities in the country, you know, don't have a women's team currently. So I think there is that, for me, is where I would sort of be looking at immediately and investing in, you know, a league which actually gets players all over the country playing in a top division, just like, you know, I live in London, it's happening here in the Tyrol.
Yeah. Alison, thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick break.
Game On.
On 2FM. Weekdays from 6.